Tentor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Heretic Lives by Michael Anderley. Narrated by David Stifel. Preface. With the Witch on its side, the Federation of Human and Alien People won the war, and was promptly torn apart by human factions within. A dark regime rose in its place on Earth, and needed a scapegoat. It called all of those with talent, aberrations, who were no better than monsters or animals, less than human. Now, the threat the regime feared most might return. But first, a voice would come from the wilderness to warn them. Chapter 1. Paint peeled on the walls, and the carpet underfoot was threadbare. John sat on the edge of the old couch left by previous tenants, careful to balance on the frame and not rely on the cushions. Things moved in those, and they stank of age, not to mention a pit that hadn't been toilet-trained. He rested his chin on his hands and his elbows on his knees and stared at the broken television. Despite his fixed gaze, he didn't see it, nor did he see the wall or register the stench rising from the couch. His mind was a long way away. At the top end of the city and in the foothills, to be precise, it seemed to have somehow returned to an upstairs room above a row of derelict shops from which he'd stormed out. He hadn't been thinking all that clearly when he hurried down the back stairs and headed swiftly but cautiously into the night. When he reached the alley behind the shops, he made sure his route was clear, bolted and sprinted to prevent his mates from catching up. He knew they would try to change his mind. They needed him, they said. The mission couldn't go on without him. Well, good, because he wanted them to live. The mission shouldn't go on. It couldn't if they were to survive. With him gone, their plans would hopefully fizzle and come to nothing. He sighed, scrubbed his face with his hands, and ran his fingers through his hair to massage his scalp. It did nothing to ease the tension. With him gone, he had honestly hoped they'd give up on the idea, scrap it, and forget he'd ever raised it. John's stomach churned, and it had nothing to do with the burrito he'd lifted off an unattended plate at lunchtime. His friends didn't have the strategic know-how, the savvy, he hunted for the word and couldn't find it. Well, whatever it was they needed to succeed and come through the mission alive. That was what they didn't have. They'd always relied on him for it. Without him, they should have given up on the idea and simply gone back to secretly wishing ill on the regime, like everyone else. They would have been disappointed and unfulfilled, but safe. He left, and they abandoned the plan. That was how it should have gone. Unfortunately, it hadn't. John stayed on the move for 3 weeks, and in doing so, had effectively abandoned his final school year as he'd left before the exams. He had talent. If he'd stayed, the regime would have known for sure, so he'd put an end to all plans for the raid and left. His friends should have settled into school again, and would be close to graduation if they kept their dumb heads down. By now he should have been gone long enough for the regime to lose interest in them, but that wasn't what he'd heard the last time he'd checked the underground grapevine. Rumor had it that a group of kids from the North Shore were about to do something crazy. The news had stopped him cold, but try as he might, he couldn't pin down where on the North Shore they were from, or exactly what they intended to do. All he had was that it was crazy, and he recognized Natalia and William from the descriptions. "Fools," his informant had confided, and shaken his head. "There's one born every minute, right?" One of the others had snorted, "Yeah, and one dies every minute or so, too. The regime makes sure of that." They had changed the course of the conversation. "But they're only kids. John had faded into the background and moved carefully away. That kind of talk in an open space? Like the man had said, one died every minute. The words that followed the protest still haunted him.
The regime doesn't care how old they are. They won't put up with anyone who stands against them. That girl's choir a few years back, you know the one?
Memory made the nausea stronger. While he would much prefer not to, it was impossible to forget the girl's choir. Rumor had it that a talent had sung with them, or maybe more than one. Either way, they'd all been sent for re-education, his girlfriend among them. And it had been 2 years before, not a few. He knew that because he'd looked forward to his girlfriend coming back and the regime saying it had all been a mistake. But it had never happened. They were always on the lookout for more talents. He shuddered. The regime. He'd grown up under it, and he hated it. When he was little, he admired their enforcers, but that hadn't lasted long. His parents had been deathly afraid of them, and once they'd started taking kids out of his school, he'd learned to be afraid of them, too. Anyone with talent had an instant place in the regime's navy, or instant death. The regime didn't mess around, and his friends intended to raid one of its facilities, the one he'd chosen, and probably used the plan he'd outlined. John rested his head in his hands and stared at the floor, the churning turning into a lump at the base of his throat, and the nausea grew worse. This was all his fault. He should never have left them unsupervised. Finally, he pushed to his feet and dragged his hands through his hair before he retrieved his jacket and pulled it on. Memories of their last conversation still haunted him. He'd tried to get them to give it up, and when they'd refused to listen, he'd told them he was out. As in gone, quitting, and good luck to them living through it on their own. While he hadn't meant it to be a challenge, at least one of them had taken it that way. If he were smart, he'd leave them to it. There wasn't anything he could do. Like everyone said, you can't save the stupid, mate. Except there was a difference between the stupid and his friends. Even if they were the same, he couldn't simply leave them to face the regime on their own. The problem, however, was that he couldn't work out what he should do. It wasn't like he could defeat a regime enforcement patrol on his own, not even with the talent he'd hidden thus far. John groaned and slung his pack over his shoulder. It was time to move. He'd gone to the meeting ready to do whatever it took to keep his friends out of trouble, and extended it into running away from home and the final round of regime testing. Now he would have to go back. Concern for them helped to keep his frustration under control. He hoped he could come up with a plan to save his friends before he got there. While he was talented, they were not. However it went down, he knew he'd be fine. The regime wanted to control the talents. It gave them a choice when it caught up with them. Anyone else? A shiver whispered involuntarily up his spine. Anyone else? Not so much. Not from the rumors he'd heard. If those were true, he hoped trying to negotiate would buy his friends enough time to escape. The idea made him snort.
Yeah, and maybe the regime will let us all go and live in peace if we promise to be very, very good from now on. Give it a rest.
His choices would be to join the regime navy or die. And they wouldn't mess around. He'd be free, all right, in the Navy, with a solid career and a gun to his head every remaining second of his life. An uncomfortable churning in his gut contracted to form a heavy lump, and he swallowed to keep it down. Since they hadn't given up, he hoped they had stuck to the plan. At least that way he'd know where to find them. They would target the regime communications center. Before the disaster, it had been open to the public. Now the whole facility was surrounded by concrete walls, some 20 feet tall and 10 feet thick. The regime had added guardhouses on the hills overlooking it, like it wanted to make sure no one could take a peek inside. That was what had drawn his attention to it. It became even more intriguing when he heard the rumors that destroying the center would do more than screw up the regime's communications capability for Australia's east coast. He'd heard losing it would damage their international communications, too. John had found the idea appealing. Maybe if their communications went down, people would be able to... He shook his head to cut off the wishful thought. The idea had sounded good the first time he'd bounced it off his friends. But then he'd done some digging. That was what the argument had been about. Destroying the Snake River complex would do jack to the regime's communications. There were backups. All that would happen would be the regime launching their retaliation with a vengeance, and people in the northern suburbs would lose their internet access for a couple of months. He told the guys this, but William wouldn't hear of it.
"You're wrong, John," his friend had said. "Dead wrong." "You'll be the one who's dead," he had retorted, "and they'll be able to phone home and brag about it. You're simply chicken."
John remembered being shocked speechless.
"Chicken? Like, how old are they?"
He set his pack down at the door, took the bottled water and an energy bar out of it, and shoved them into a jacket pocket. Leaving the pack on the floor, he looked around the room to make sure he hadn't forgotten anything. A small box of tinned food stood on the table with a six-pack of water, and he'd left his blanket rolled beside it. He thought about taking them with him, then shrugged. Even if he reached his friends in time, the chances that he could get out of this alive were slim. It would be better to leave it for someone who would get some use out of it. Quickly, he felt in his pockets to make sure he had his keys. While the tenement was officially abandoned, someone made sure people paid to stay there, and a couple of extremely big someones enforced it. The keys were a passport in. With his fingers curled around them, he headed to the door. The last time he'd seen his friends still played through his head. Natalia had stepped in.
"Are you sure, John?"
She'd sounded disappointed, but he couldn't tell if it was in him or in the news he'd brought. He'd nodded.
"As sure as I can be. Even if we get in, all we'll do is annoy them. They've got contingencies. And you know this, how,"
William had challenged.
"It's called research," he had snapped. "That's not what you said when you first raised the idea," Trevor had argued.
He was the sidekick, the one who was supposed to keep William in check and be a voice of reason if John's ideas got too ambitious. That time he'd challenged the safer path. William was quick to follow his lead.
"Yeah, man. You said it was the best plan you thought of so far." "And it was," he agreed. "Right up until I looked into it and discovered how many things I hadn't known." "So why didn't you look into them before you raised it?"
Amy, Natalia's friend, had demanded.
"Because it might have drawn attention, and I didn't want to risk it unless you were interested." "So you got us interested without knowing all the facts?"
William's voice had risen, and his face flushed with anger. That was the moment when he had known the argument was lost, but his friend hadn't finished.
"And when I say you might be wrong again, and that there's only one way to find out, what are you going to do about it?"
That had been when he'd left. He'd honestly thought that would save them. John sighed and pulled the apartment door closed behind him. He knew now that what he'd assumed had been dead wrong. His friends were good kids, but they didn't think much before they did something. All heart and no head, as his dad once said. He couldn't remember why now, but it still rang true. His mates were hot-headed, and the girls weren't much better. If he didn't get to them fast, they'd vanish exactly like Lucia, and he didn't want to think about what it might mean. The fact that they'd surfaced in the underground news was a sure sign of that. Everyone knew the regime had agents everywhere. In addition, all kinds of people made money by selling what they heard. His friends were in more trouble than they knew. He took the stairs two at a time and pushed out the side entrance into a narrow street. A guy huddled in the doorway and scowled at the rain.
"Do you live here?"
John snapped, and the stranger jumped and looked guilty. Before the man could say anything, he held his room key out.
"Apartment 12. It's open. I paid until the end of the month and left food on the table. It's yours. I won't be back."
The vagrant hesitated, like he was looking for a catch, so he tossed him the key and kept moving. He heard the jingle as he reached the narrow sidewalk and assumed the man had caught it, but he didn't look back. A bus was about due. He flipped his jacket hood over his head, thrust his hands into his pockets, and hurried to the bus stop. Chapter 2. The city had crept right up to the edge of the communications center. Buildings clustered around the foot of the wall, separated by an apron of concrete and a two-lane road. A bus stop stood opposite, in front of a gym, a pub, and a takeaway. All seemed to do a booming trade, and no one paid much attention to the kids who walked past. They either lived in one of the nearby burbs, or they were there for some other reason. Many worked part-time or came to party illegally. As long as they kept out of trouble, however, their IDs were never scrutinized too closely. Predictably, no one noticed when the six friends meandered down the road and cut through a side street to reach the edge of the bushland that bordered both the suburb and the communications facility. And if they had, they wouldn't have cared. Kids snuck out that way all the time. Four guys and two girls. It wasn't hard to work out what they were up to. Which had been the idea? Natalia had come up with it, and scowled when Amy had protested.
"And what?"
she demanded, with one hand on her hip in a challenging posture.
"I suppose you'd think we should tell him we're all study buddies or something, because for sure they'll fall for that."
"And it's only in case someone stops us anyway," Trevor had been quick to point out.
"We don't have to say anything if we get in fast enough."
That had been the essence of the plan. The girls had to get in and find something that proved the regime was doing things to talents. They assumed the facility would give them access. The boys planned to keep the security staff busy while the girls entered and made their escape again, and they had to do it fast and avoid the surveillance cams while they did so. When they were done, or on their way out, they had to ping the boys to let them know.
"What happens if they try to catch us?" Baron had asked.
Amy had rolled her eyes, but William's reply had been immediate.
"We scatter," he told them. "You all know where to go, right?"
They'd nodded to confirm the different public transport locations they'd aim for. It would make them more difficult for the enforcers to work out which suburb they called home. They'd meet at the shop a week later. If they could. Now they walked through the dark like a group of locals out for a stroll, until they slipped through a gap in the fence surrounding the parkland. Reconvening on the other side, they huddled together and listened for any sign that they'd been seen. When all remained as quiet as any urban street could be, they wove between the trees, careful of the thick webs strung between them.
"They hate spiders,"
Jerry whispered, jerked himself clear of one he hadn't seen, and brushed his hands over his clothes. Natalia came to help him.
"Don't get any ideas," she grumbled. "I merely don't want you to squeal like a baby if one runs up your neck."
He shivered.
"Don't worry," he said.
"Just make sure it's not on me."
"You know they're as scared of you as you are of them, right?"
Amy demanded.
It hit the dirt and ran the second you destroyed its home.
Man, I hope so.
His heartfelt reply drew a muted chuckle from his teammates.
As long as it didn't run this way, Trevor muttered as they hurried forward.
They all breathed a sigh of relief when they reached the edge of the trees.
They're down here,
William informed them, and led them down a brief escarpment to the edge of the creek.
Where?
Mamie demanded, and Trevor hushed her.
Along here.
William's voice was equally hushed as he led them down a narrow dirt trail. They fell silent and crept forward to where concrete met the creek line. Six dark holes marred the gray surface, and reddish-brown stains marked where the water fell.
What the heck do they need those for?
Amy whispered. William's face was lit by his mobile as he checked something.
John said they were emergency stormwater drainage.
He studied the walls of the communications complex.
I don't see why they'd need it.
Trevor made a scornful sound.
Oh, that concrete. Water's got to go somewhere when it rains.
They all thought about that before William shrugged.
Well, that's how you girls would get in.
Amy exchanged glances with the other girl, and they moved closer to the pipes.
You are kidding me, she whispered,
and her eyes widened as her voice bounced away from her. She moved back a couple of feet and pointed at the nearest pipe.
In there?
She demanded in hushed tones, and gestured to herself and Amy.
Are you sure we'll fit?
John thought so,
William told her smugly. Unaware of John's bus pulling up in front of the pub, he added,
You saying he didn't have your measurements? We all know how the man liked his research.
Amy slapped his shoulder.
You've got a dirty mind. Besides, you know he never let anyone get that close.
Not after Lucia,
Natalia grumbled, and Trevor snickered. He caught her glare and stopped. William stepped into the gap.
He said the pipes got a little narrower, but he was sure you'd fit because you were smaller than we were.
While this was true, neither of the girls looked impressed.
So what? We're small and female, so we get all the dirty work?
She jerked a finger at the pipe.
Do you have any idea what's coming out of there?
Trevor shrugged. Should be rainwater runoff, he said. Nothing nasty.
Have you smelled it?
Amy hissed. He shook his head.
I don't go around sniffing drainage pipes. Well, maybe you should before you send people up them.
Amy pouted.
I still say it's not big enough, especially if it gets a little narrower farther in.
William sighed impatiently.
Are you suggesting one of us can fit?
Natalia glanced at the pipe.
I'm not saying John was wrong, but I've got big hips.
Baron chuckled. Unlike his mates, who'd all reached the 6-foot mark and had shoulders to make a rugby star proud, he'd stopped growing at 5'8".
Tell you what, he said. I'll strip my shirt off to compare the width of my shoulders if you'll strip your jeans off to compare the width of your hips.
The girl studied him from head to toe, and her expression said exactly what she thought of his idea.
Fit chance,
she said with a sniff, and glanced at the pipe again as though measuring it with her gaze. After a minute she looked back.
Fine, but if we see rats, we might blow this whole effort.
Well, now that's settled, William told them.
The boys and I are going to head around to the other side and see if we can make them look that way, while you get up through the pipes and find whatever John thought was here.
Access,
Natalia hissed her impatience.
It was access, you idiot. We get in, Amy works her hacking mojo, and we get proof that re-education is merely a myth.
She swallowed, and her face went pale, because if re-education was only a myth, there would inevitably be riots. And they'd better not get caught, because if they were, they'd be... The girl pushed that thought aside. It was far better that she didn't think about it. Someone had to bring the regime down and stand up for all the people they hurt. This was only the beginning. Once people knew what they were doing, they'd retaliate. They wouldn't simply stand aside. She watched as the four boys hurried along the creek, then moved uphill to where the parkland stopped and the suburb began. A parking lot and the entrance to an underground garage made a convenient location for them to wreak some havoc. Amy giggled softly as soon as they were out of sight.
"You have a pet rat," she pointed out,
and Natalia smirked.
"I know, but I wanted to make sure they weren't taking diversionary ops so they could simply blow stuff up while we took the boring part." "You think they'd have allowed us along if John was still here?"
Natalia pursed her lips, then shrugged.
"It's hard to say. He was the one who was supposed to go in to see what he could find."
She paused.
"If he'd stayed, I was going to ask him if we could go in with him." "Because of my hacking magic?"
the other girl teased and poked her with her elbow, and she blushed.
"You know you can give John a run for his money any day. Now, I merely assumed three hackers were better than one. We could pull more data that way, and maybe watch each other's backs."
Sure you did," Amy teased. She studied the pipes. "Those look very snug."
"John was much thinner than the other guys,"
Natalia reminded her, not aware that he had left the bus stop and now hurried through the back streets behind two warehouses on the opposite side of the parking lot.
"Whatever."
The other girl turned and approached the first pipe.
"You want to give this one a go, or see if any of the others smell better?"
Chapter 3 John skidded to a halt in the shadow of a forklift. He'd slid under the chain-link fence, glad of his jacket as he'd wriggled through. Cutting across the warehouse yard would give him better cover than he'd find in the open street. There were more places to hide there. This forklift was one, and the empty containers on unhooked trailers provided others. He scurried forward and crouched low to take advantage of the shadows. He decided he could always use the container like a ladder and drop over the other side of the fence where he wanted to get out. After all, it wasn't there to keep people in. With his gaze constantly alert for security cameras, he hurried cautiously across the yard. In the end, he didn't need to climb a container to get over the fence. He simply went under it the same way he'd come in. Someone had hired a very cheap contractor when they did the fencing there. It was a wonder they hadn't been robbed already. Maybe being this close to a regime outpost kept them safe. Whatever. He shrugged and winced as he flexed his shoulders. Maybe he should have gone over via the container. He would have had fewer grazes. Remaining low, he moved behind a set of dumpsters. One was marked for recycling, and the other contained rubbish.
Another miracle, he thought,
and wondered if the recycling one truly held only cardboard. If it did, it would have made a much better diversion than what the guys planned to do. He poked his head out from behind the dumpster and crept alongside it, careful to stick to the shadows. Movement caught his eye, and four bulky shapes emerged from the bushes bordering the parkland. To his relief, they stopped at the edge of the car park.
"That's it,"
he whispered.
"Take a moment to think about it."
They took 30 seconds before they began to move quietly between the parked cars. John groaned and rested a hand against his forehead.
"What are you doing, Will? Trying to get yourself killed? You know they won't let you get away with that kind of shit."
He tensed and readied himself to make the short dash to the shadow of the closest car. Ahead of him, William, Trevor, and whoever else they'd roped in for this suicide mission reached the next vehicle and huddled together. With a muttered oath, he rose to...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?